everybody, and welcome to episode 131 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the man who has the same number of court wins in the state of Pennsylvania as Rudy Giuliani, Brian. Brian, how goes it this week, my friend?
Doing well, doing special, living my best life. I feel every time the sun comes up, it is an opportunity for just some wonderment to take place. And when the sun goes down and I close my eyes, I realize that that it's exactly what took place. Life is a beautiful thing.
This is an extraordinarily positive message from you. Any particular reason?
Thanksgiving is coming up. It is my favorite holiday of the year. I have some very fond memories of, you know, my dad would invite a lot of the family friends. My mother would cook this gigantic meal. We'd have a table of about 8 to 12, sometimes more people at the table. A lot of people from different households. It was a way to open up your home and share with others. And it's right around the corner. We've got 1 week from tonight. It's going to be Thanksgiving. I personally have gone around to different strangers on the street, inviting them to my Thanksgiving home this year. But
I feel like we're being instructed not to have people in our homes. In fact, I think there's a limit of 10 in New York. And with you being in kind of a small apartment there, I would hope it would be less than that.
Oh, no, it's very large. We'll be social distancing. I've invited 27 people so far that have RSVP'd. It's like a potluck. Everyone's going to bring a different dish that we'll, put out. I've got some folding chairs that I'm going to put out. It's going to be a special holiday. I'm really
looking forward to it. Will there be singing going on? Will you potentially start caroling early with the group?
Well, first, what we do is we do a improv. We do a 2 hour long improv where, about seven of us get up there. People sitting in the chairs will throw out scenarios, names, animals. And then the rest of us will have to act out a scene based on the nouns that have been provided to us. Usually it ends up in a lot of talking. Coughing, laughing. It's going to be really special this year, Ron. I know that you said you did not want to attend. You and your wife were one of some of the first people I invited. I'm a little hurt that you decided not to join me and these strangers. But I believe that a miracle is going to take place. I believe we're going to make some new friends. I certainly, I consider myself very fortunate this year that, I've been employed, unlike others. And this year, I'm going to open my home to the less fortunate.
Well, if you possibly move it to that hotel banquet room across the street, maybe we'll reconsider. But okay. A little tight quarters there in the house. But in the meantime, let's get things moving. You feel like having a drink, Brian?
Yeah.
All right.
Drink of the week.
Nazdrovia.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Who's?
Drink of the week. Drink of the week. Drink of
Brian,
the week.
Brian, what are you drinking this week?
What am I drinking? I cracked into the beer fridge.
Okay.
Cracked in. Broke out the Leisure Lagoon Hazy Pale Ale.
Ooh,
I'm going to show you what this. I went with the Hazy Pale Ale. I'm going to show you what this looks like. Look at this beautiful, beautiful son of a bitch right here.
Hazy.
The thing that I love about it is that it hops on the hazy trend that's very popular now, but it's got a unique spin. I did a little research. It combines the best of East Coast and West Coast pale ales while using what I would feel kind of tastes like a West Coast hop. Then it's fermented in London the Third yeast for a softer mouthfeel, which accentuates the fruitiness. End result is a brighter and juicier than your typical West Coast pale ale, but it has that pleasant bitterness and an easy drinking ABV.
Let's take a sip, Brian. Do you feel that perhaps this is finally resolving and squashing the East Coast, West Coast beef between the breweries?
Well, on the left half of this is the Tupac side. That's the West Coast. The right side, Biggie. And when I drank it, I'm like Kid Rock. Ooh, I do not like that.
You don't? All right. Well, I was very excited. Number one, I found a great new beer store nearby called Beer Hut in Northeast Philadelphia. It is like for a beer aficionado, it was like going to Willy Wonka, it's Candyland, minus all the kids dying. But it was just a great selection of beer. And I found one that I've been trying to hunt down for a while. That is from El Segundo Brewery. It is the Stone Cold Steve Austin Broken Skull IPA. Because if there is someone that likes beer, it's Steve Austin. If I were to put together a list of humans on the planet that like beer, I would put probably Brett Kavanaugh first.
I liked beer.
And then I would put Stone Cold Steve Austin a close second. So let me try this, the Broken Skull IPA.
It's a very, I like the packaging. I like the design of the can. Oh, how does it taste?
That's good, actually.
What's the alcohol content in there?
This is clocking in at a solid 6.7%.
So, how many of those do you have planned to drink in the next hour?
We shall see. I actually picked up a Narragansett that I might drink for after dark, but we'll see how that goes. Oh, this is a good one, too. Billy is drinking the Yuengling Hershey Chocolate Porter. Little jealous.
Son of a bitch. I want that beer.
Yep.
Mm. Can you set one aside, Billy? Me? Can you just set? No, not you. Yeah. I'm not talking to you. Talking to Billy. If Billy could set one aside for me, I will be forever in your debt. Well, I drink this nonsense.
Well, you drink that one that you don't like. I will have to give El Segundo and Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA a definite thumbs up on that one. I will be all happy right. A couple more of these.
There you go.
In the meantime, let's get to racism.
This week in
racism.
Brian, do you remember how the last couple of weeks we were hard pressed to find racism?
We had solved it.
The election, everything else. Well, that's ended, Brian. I got front and back going on. We've got a lot of racism, so let's get to it. First, Billy only has one of the Yuengling Hershey's Porter, but he's going to try and find it. And Janelle said she's going to see if she can have it too. And I'll take a look for you, Brian. I mean, Yuengling.
I appreciate it. It's not in my neighborhood. I've looked.
I know. You have a limited selection there. But let's talk racism, Ryan. In Pennsylvania, actually, Scranton, to be exact, a leaked internal affairs file shows that two former police officers exchanged racist texts. The texts were found during an investigation into one of the officers for sexual assault. The cell phone of former Corporal Tom McDonald was recovered from a police vehicle and showed that he and former patrolwoman Brianna Gifford had exchanged 76 racist comments about black people, 6 about Hispanic people, and 3 about those from the Middle East. McDonald is currently the subject of numerous lawsuits, including a federal lawsuit alleging that he used his position in the department's undercover drug unit to coerce female informants into sexual acts, and one alleging that he threatened to kill a fellow officer after being fired. When asked about the racist texts, McDonald responded that while they could be construed as being racist, he didn't use them in a racist manner. He admitted that they were inappropriate and unprofessional, but that they reflected the culture within the Scranton Police Department. So out of those 76 racist comments about black people, apparently they were just all taken out of context.
All of them. But they weren't racist. They weren't coming from a racist place.
No, he wasn't using them in a racist way. Maybe it was this term, but apparently you can use a racist term and not use it in a racist way. So we're learning things.
I would love to watch his defense team try and explain that one.
Just shocking that people just have this distrust of the police. No idea why that is. Going up to Windsor, Connecticut, Cracker Barrel has issued an apology after a decoration that looked like a noose was found hanging in the rafters of one of their restaurants. It was initially noticed by Tamara Hawkins, who took a video while in the restaurant and noticed it while watching the video later. The decoration was an antique electric soldering iron with an original wrapped cord. Apparently, the cord should have been removed prior to displaying the iron. Personally, if I go to a Cracker Barrel and I don't see something racist, I'm kind of shocked. So why you would go to Cracker Barrel and be surprised is honestly beyond me.
There is an absolute racist vibe to Cracker Barrel. I've eaten at Cracker Barrel a few times. There's something kitschy about it. But you absolutely feel that they will seat a black family of four in the worst table all the way off to the side.
Yes. All right. Shocking, Brian, we've got racism in Kentucky again in Louisville.
No.
Yep. A mixed race family has been repeatedly harassed over the past few months, and a neighbor has been charged for the acts. Michela and Connie Pineda had lived in the Lake Forest neighborhood of Louisville since April of 2019, with the harassment beginning that July. A neighbor, Suzanne Kraft, has been charged with three counts of criminal mischief and three counts of harassing communications, and was found guilty of being in contempt of court for violating a non-contact order. Amongst the harassment was swastikas spray-painted in their driveway and burned with chemicals into their lawn, bullets received in the mail, notes that said N-words leave and no N-words, Kraft's 12-year-old daughter using a racial slur against one of the Pineda children, and Kraft threatening to run over one of the Pineda children with her car. The harassment has continued despite the involvement of law enforcement, and the Pinedas have filed a lawsuit against Kraft and their homeowners association.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty horrible.
That's aggressive. That is aggressive.
Very aggressive. They've gotten other letters. I mean, it's almost a daily hate mail, things of that nature.
It's a fucking shame.
Let's see here. Cori Bush, she is a first-term congresswoman recently elected to the House to represent Missouri's 1st District. Well, she showed up to Congress last Friday wearing a mask bearing the name of Breonna Taylor. However, according to her, there were a number of her Republican colleagues that started to call her Breonna, assuming it was her name. Apparently, yes, there are still people that are not familiar with the name Breonna Taylor, and they seem to be a number of Republicans in the House. Again.
Oh, my God.
I think this is 3 weeks in a row. We have Baton Rouge. And this week,
Baton Rouge,
a pediatrician was arrested and charged with punching and verbally assaulting a black student athlete at Southern University. Shane McKinney, he is a 54-year-old pediatrician working at Our Lady of the Lake Children's Hospital. He was charged with simple battery after being questioned about the attack. He allegedly punched the 22-year-old black woman in the chest while verbally assaulting her and calling her the N-word. He is also being investigated for an assault on a woman on a jogging trail near LSU in July. The hospital has placed McKinney on leave while they conduct an internal investigation.
Okay.
A group of former players for the University of Iowa football team have filed a lawsuit against the school, citing years of racial discrimination. The group had initially requested a $20 million settlement, but withdrew the settlement after the university rejected their demands. In addition to the $20 million in damages, the settlement had called for the firings of head coach Kirk Ferentz, offensive line coach Brian Ferentz, and athletic director Gary Barda. Over the summer, the university had hired a law firm to conduct an independent investigation into the football program, which found that the program, quote, perpetuated racial and cultural biases and diminished the value of cultural diversity. The university did fire assistant coach Chris Doyle over the summer due to allegations of bullying black athletes and paid him $1.1 million in a resignation agreement.
Okay.
I gotta get one of those deals. Just get fired, get $1 million.
But you got fired, but what happened to the $1 million?
I mean, I didn't get the $1 million. So that's what I'm saying. I need one of those deals. I got the point where you just get let go and you don't get the $1 million.
Okay.
Discovery Bay, California. A black family has posted surveillance video and cell phone video showing them being harassed by one of their white neighbors. The Jones family have lived in their neighborhood for 12 years and say they have never had any issues with the neighbor in question, Adonna Dean. That changed recently when Dean showed up at their home carrying a stun gun and saying, quote, "You guys are acting like black people and you should act like white people." She later goes on to say in the video, "You're a black person in a white neighborhood and you're acting like one. Why don't you act like a white person in a white neighborhood?" Sheriff's deputies responded and filed a report, but determined that no crime had taken place. And Brian,
I'm sure enough, yeah, no, it's those sound like
stories it. In this week in racism.
It is a sad reminder that for every step we take forward, there are still multiple citizens of this country that want to pull us in the opposite direction.
It is. It's very sad. No question about it. Yeah. So I'm sure next week we will probably have even more stories to report on.
I hope not. I hope we don't. I hope that's not the case. I hope that, as we get closer to the lovely Thanksgiving Day holiday, I don't know if I told you what my plans were. I've invited 38.
And I don't think we need to recap. I believe you have mentioned it.
All people I met on the subway going through Elmhurst, Jackson Heights, Corona, all these people, I've just literally handed them a card, which, because I care, I had translated into Spanish, because a lot of these people, English is not their primary language, and they probably thought I was a little weird, a white man inviting me into their home. Let's see. It's going to be a fun day.
I hope it's going to be a survivable day. In the meantime, Brian, let's talk about what's bothering us this week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's your beef this week, my friend?
My beef this week is people who refuse to accept that there is a pandemic going on and are insisting that getting the family together for Thanksgiving is more important than protecting the your loved ones from spreading the coronavirus.
That seems ironic to me.
It was intended to. I don't think anybody actually took me seriously that I was inviting strangers into my home. All joking aside, I have seen so many posts on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Parler. I've listened to podcasts with people whose opinions I respect. And there seems to be so many people who are like, F you. You can't tell me what to do. Thanksgiving, you can't tell me that I'm not going to, spend it with grandma. This could be her last one. We're going to have our memories and share time with each other. And the numbers have gone up incredibly over the past month. You've got areas in Texas, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, the whole Central America. And not the type of people, the Central Americas and the people I invited. But literally, this is just not the year, people. Keep it small. Keep it to your immediate family. Just take care. Be careful. Don't be stupid.
There you go. Can I piggyback on your beef? Because that kind of aligns with my beef this week.
God damn, do I love when you piggyback me.
It's less the people that want to get together in a group for Thanksgiving, and more the police officers and sheriffs that have decided that they are not going to enforce these restrictions on Thanksgiving. I know there's been a number of sheriffs in the state of New York, for example, that have said, "Well, we're not going to enforce Governor Cuomo's ruling." And
Are they supposed to just, I'm just asking, but are they supposed to just start knocking on doors to see how many people you have in the home? Like, is that the directive?
I'm not sure what the directive is. I mean, I'm sure there are ways, if you get a call from, a neighbor or if you see a lot of cars at a house, like the one one story I always remember is from a few months ago in Australia when they were under a lockdown. There was a group of cars, like 30 cars, that went through a drive-through at like a KFC at like 1 a.m. And they were all like, oh yeah, we're having this party a few blocks over, you should come. And the people at KFC called the police and were like, they're like too many people at this party. And the cops came and like handed out tickets, you know, their fines and everything else. But what I don't get is all these years, you know, police have used the excuse of, well, we don't get to decide what laws we want to enforce. Like, I don't like arresting somebody for a gram of marijuana, but I don't get to choose what laws I enforce.
So but hands now, up behind your back.
Now they're choosing what laws they decide to enforce.
Yes.
Whether it's a gathering, whether it's a mask mandate. Again, it just seems a tad bit hypocritical and kind of reinforces why I think a lot of people don't trust police. Because they do enforce the law in a biased manner.
Allegedly. I have a lot of police officer friends that watch this show, and I'm not looking to lose any of them.
I understand. Are they on the up and up, those or those guys? Or?
Oh, I don't really have any police friends.
I was going to say, you strike me as an anti-establishment type man.
I'm thinking about getting a face tattoo, ACAB.
All right. Might hinder your future employment, but you do you, Brian. In the meantime, I got to congratulate you. Yes, it is time for NFL Locks of the Week. And once again, Brian, rocking out the 2-0. You went with the Raiders -4.5 against Denver. Wasn't even that close. Denver loses by 25. Raiders win 37-12. Then you had the Bills +2.5. And I think we all saw the Hail Mary pass that Arizona had at the end of the game, putting them up 32-30. Had you sweating a little bit because that extra point would have put you into the loss column. But yes, the Arizona Cardinals decided not to even try the kick because they were worried that it might get blocked and returned for a 2-point conversion. So they do not even kick. You get that. This is probably your closest one. You had to be worried about that one.
I was a little worried when the ball was in the air.
Yeah, as so often happens.
Well done, but Ron.
Yes.
I will accept your accolades, but I believe you are being a little bashful at the moment because you also went 2-0 for the 10th week in a row. You should be holding your head up high. You, sir, are a double winner. You saw the Vikings laying 2.5 against the Bears and said, this is the Vikings' year. 2.5, I'd give even more. Vikings win 19-13. Then you saw the Dolphins at home against the woeful Los Angeles Chargers. Dolphins win 29-21. How does it feel to be 20-0?
It feels damn good. I mean, Tua time is real. And I'm 20-0, and you're 20-0. So that's 40-0, I believe, if my math checks out.
Yes. And for people that are betting and following us, I really hope you're getting close to retirement.
Brian, who do you like this upcoming weekend?
I'm glad you asked me. That's a great question. Saints are playing Atlanta. I think Atlanta is woeful this year. They don't have the same cornerbacks as last year. They don't have the same running backs. They don't have the same backpacks, if you will. Saints, -4 over the Falcons. Then I've got Baltimore. It is their year. They've had a couple scares. They're going up against Tennessee Titans. Ravens laying 5.5. Go with Baltimore. So my two picks are the Saints and Ravens. Parlay them back and forth. AB, slippy, sloppy. You will make bank.
I mean, this is that's some bold picks. I mean, you've got Baltimore coming off a loss to the Patriots, and New Orleans, I think, going to be without Drew Brees with, I think, some broken ribs and a punctured lung. But, I mean, if you say go with it, I say go with it. Put the house on the Saints.
Wait a second. Drew Brees is not playing?
I don't believe he is. I don't know if he's been ruled out yet, but I know he's pretty banged up. Anyway, but that's locked. So let's look at my picks. We've got the speaking of a beat up team, we've got the Dallas Cowboys going into Minnesota. I'm riding with Minnesota again this week. Minnesota favored by 7, So take Minnesota minus the points against the Cowboys. And then you've got Kansas City going in to play the Raiders. This is definitely a grudge match. Raiders beat Kansas City in Kansas City earlier this season. Their bus apparently took a victory lap around the stadium before going to the airport. Some definite bad blood there. Raiders are the underdogs at home by 8. I think it's going to be closer than that. I think the Chiefs still win, but I like the Raiders to cover. Raiders plus 8.
Really?
Ed, not over it, as always. Listen, next week is Thanksgiving. You could be drinking Mad Dog at Thanksgiving, or you could be drinking Cristal. You put your money on the NFL Locks of the Week from Ron and Brian, you'll be drinking top shelf liquor when you don't have family over next week.
That's how we roll. That is how we roll. Speaking of next week, all joking aside, I think people know that, you know, I'm willing to relax the veil, to let people see through the braggadocious outer layer that I like to project. I think I can. Is it all right if I say I'm not actually inviting 26 strangers that I met on the subway? Can I? Is that okay if I do?
I believe it is. Yes.
Okay, I'm not inviting them. However, 1 week from tonight is Thanksgiving. It's going to be a different Thanksgiving than one that we in Americans we've had, you know, probably in our entire lives. There's loved ones we're not going to be spending time with, family members that we will not be able to look at. And it's going to be a little weird. Ron and I spoke earlier this week and said to ourselves, what can we do to make sure that Thanksgiving is just a little bit better than people are fearing? And I think, you know, we came up with a great way of doing it. And we are going to be doing our pajama party after dark episode a week from tonight on Patreon. Ron, do you want to describe?
Ron and Brian Live. Breaking news.
That's right, Brian. Breaking news. We had talked about moving it, but we will be keeping the party going next Thursday on Thanksgiving.
Now, what you said, and this is the thing that I think is going to make it special, is that usually the live video stream of our Patreon, our After Dark, is reserved for Tier 2 Patreons.
Yeah,
it's, and above. And for this one episode, Ron, I fought you on it. I said no. Aluminum people pay $5 a month. They don't deserve After Dark. They don't deserve it. They don't deserve to watch After Dark.
I would agree with that.
They can listen the next day, but they cannot watch it. And they certainly cannot join us live.
Not live for the Pajama Jammy Jam.
But this year, because it's Thanksgiving, this month, a week from tonight, all Patreon subscribers will be able to join our After Dark Pajama Party. It takes place the last Thursday of every month, not just the bronze and silver and gold and platinum and diamond Patreon subscribers. Yes. This month for November, because it's Thanksgiving, aluminum level Patreon subscribers will be able to join After Dark Pajama Party.
There you go. Well, that is exciting news, and we look forward to all of our Patreon subscribers who join us. And if you are not a Patreon subscriber yet, look at the scroll on the bottom of the screen here. If you're not watching the video, we'll tell you, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com in the upper right-hand side. You're going to see a button that says become a patron, and just click that. That'll take you to our Patreon page. You can sign up there. So for as little as $5 a month, you can get yourself some Ron and Brian swag and have access to next Thursday's live After Dark Pajama Jammy Jam.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast.
It's going to be a good time had by all. So let's get into some of our topics for the week. Yet again, for another week, we are discussing the election. It is
an election
that seemingly will never end due to some of the lawsuits and things like that that have been filed. Pennsylvania, the state that I am in, has certainly been interesting. There has been a number of lawyers on the Trump campaign that have come to Pennsylvania, that have left Pennsylvania, that have asked to be removed from the case. And we had in our midst this week the presence of Rudy Giuliani.
America's mayor. Let me rewind 19 years ago, September 2001, America shook to the core, attacked on our own soil. George Bush, president, did not make us feel better. Donald Rumsfeld felt like we were being taken over by a dictator. One man made America feel safe.
That's right.
That was New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, a prized prosecutor, attorney general in the Southern District Federal Court of New York. I butchered the title. I know that. I got the words right, but the order was completely off. And I'm going to tell you something. This man over the past 4 years has literally destroyed his entire reputation.
Without a doubt. Within the last 4 days, I think has.
But he looks good. He looks great for him. You know, and the thing is this. He's not, I don't think mentally he's as sharp as he was before. No. I don't think that he understands the subtleties of the law. Looks great. He looks great. Presentation.
We just put a photo up of him there from the press conference today, which we'll talk about momentarily. Earlier this week, he was in federal court in Pennsylvania for the first time in 30 years, hopping onto the Trump administration lawsuit there, attempting to stop the certification of Pennsylvania's vote in the November 3rd election. Did not seem to go well. A couple of the areas. First, they are alleging that Republican voters in the state were illegally disadvantaged because some Democratic-leaning counties allowed voters to fix errors on their mail ballots. There were two voters named as co-plaintiffs with the Trump campaign. They were not able to prove that the fixing of the ballots was partisan in any way. Both Democrats and Republicans had chances to fix their ballots, whether it was provisional or mail-in. So the judge even asked, you're alleging that two people were denied the right to vote, but then you're trying to invalidate more than 6.8 million votes, thereby disenfranchising every single voter in the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Giuliani counters with, no, we only want to throw out 680,000 ballots cast in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh because Republican observers were not allowed to watch them being counted. However, that claim had already been removed from the lawsuit that Giuliani was there to fight.
Yep. So he genuinely doesn't understand the cases that he's arguing.
Right.
And if there's one thing that will not earn you points with judges is when you go and waste their time.
No, exactly. And at one point, the judge asked which standard of review he should apply in the case, and Giuliani responded, "I think the normal one." And then the judge had to explain that's not exactly what standard of review means. They were talking about strict scrutiny, for example, and Giuliani was like, "Maybe I don't understand what you mean by strict scrutiny." And then another time he said, "I'm not quite sure what opacity means. It probably means you can see," to which the judge responded, "Actually, it means you can't see."
Yeah.
So the judge did allow them to file a motion by end of day yesterday to oppose Pennsylvania's attempts to dismiss the lawsuit, which, again, Giuliani just seemed confused about that. He thought he had to file the lawsuit. And they were like, "No, you just have to file a brief to oppose the motion to dismiss." So it was all over the place,
right?
Much like everything Giuliani has done. And then today, he gives this crazy press conference from the RNC headquarters in Washington with a Kinko's map that they had printed up real quick, showing a clear pathway to victory in the battleground states. Just some amazing comments from Giuliani, some amazing comments from Sidney Powell.
Who's Sidney Powell?
She is another attorney for the Trump campaign. She stated today, what we are really dealing with here and uncovering more by the day is the massive influence of communist money through Venezuela, Cuba, and likely China, and the interference with our elections here in the United States.
Whoa. Cuba is now is pumping money into the election?
Yes, apparently. And Powell also described a scheme under which an algorithm manipulated by Democrats switched votes from Trump to Biden. But she claimed it broke down because support was so strong for Trump. So Democrats were forced to use a backdoor method to manipulate the vote with mail-in ballots slipped in during the dark of night.
Listen, in the dark of night, I love a backdoor approach. 60% of the time, it works every time.
Yes. Giuliani. Wait,
okay, I'm sorry. I have to. What is going on in the photo? I don't like you put this photo up and then you just moved on. You started actually speaking facts and whatnot. What is going on this man's face?
Clearly, Rudy is using some sort of hair dye or something on that head, or he's just so full of shit that it's just leaking out of his temples now. But he was very sweaty and just. If you type in Giuliani in Google now, Giuliani sweats die is one of the top search results that already comes up. So if you really want to see something disturbing, I would recommend you check that out. Just check
it
out.
Did you see the video of him blowing his nose today?
I've caught a few different things. I mean, he was blowing his nose. He's wiping his forehead with it. I mean,
there's a video where he blows his nose into a handkerchief and then uses that same handkerchief, the same part of the handkerchief he then uses to wipe his mouth and then forehead.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't fold it and use it like some other part of it. He literally goes like this. And then he goes.
It's insane.
But that shit rolling down his forehead, like it's such a dark color.
Yeah.
Like nobody standing next to him sat there and said, hey, I'm going to whisper in your ear that you got something going on there.
No one said you might want to just step away from the camera for a minute and get yourself together.
Can I tell you about my worst flop sweat?
I would love to hear it, actually.
All right. So at different times in my life, I have been a better public speaker than at other times. I would say that I am great in a one-on-one environment. One-on-two, I'm okay on. One-on-three, I have to pay extra for. But one time I was at work. We were reissuing the employee handbook. So what we had done was we had set up information meetings with employees where I would review the changes to the employee handbook with employees. The first three times I did it, there were like two or three employees, and I did a great job. Like, I'm not like lying or exaggerating, but like it went smoothly, no problem. The employees were grateful that I explained to them that we were changing our paid time off policy, et cetera, et cetera. For some reason, one of the sessions, apparently everybody showed up to. So now there's about, realistically speaking, I'm going to say that there were about 15 to 20 people sitting around the conference room table, holding their binders with the employee handbook, staring at me. So 10 minutes into it, I'm doing fine, no problems. And then I think I flubbed a word or I said something and I said to myself, God, I fucked it up. I hope nobody picked up on that. So I continue reading through the handbook and I looked up and there was one person at that table who was like locked in eye contact with me. And somehow in my mind, I sat there and I said, oh no, he noticed. He picked up on it. And my mind, like, as I'm talking about the sections in the employee handbook, but my mind is a mile away going into a downward spiral of what a fuck up I am. It was the worst, most self-destructive, like 90 seconds of thought process I've ever had. And now, as I'm going down this spiral, I start to pick up that I'm sweating. Now, like I'm sweating here on the top of my forehead. So I'm still talking, but I'm mentally thinking to myself, oh gosh, I hope nobody notices that I'm sweating. Like, now they're going to think that I can't, that I'm lying to them, or they're saying. So the more I'm talking about this, the more I start to sweat. Now everybody is looking at me. Everybody is staring at me. I was wearing a blue shirt, long sleeve shirt. So at one point I went like this. And as I pulled my hand away, like half the sleeve was soaked through. You could actually see the arm hair like through the sweat stain. Now it's like, if I was not in a downward spiral before, I am literally just swimming in like just self-loathing, profusely sweating. It goes on. I was about halfway through the manual. So I continued to power through it, literally wiping my brow. At one point, I pointed to one of the guys in the corner in hopes that everybody would look at him. And in that meantime, I could just dot my forehead. Like, it was just raining down. I get to the end, and I put the handbook away, and I'm like, that is my presentation. So I take a breath. The guy sitting next to me was one of the executives who I had a good relationship with. As soon as I finished, he literally like reached over and slid a box of tissues across him in front of me. This guy could have done it 20 minutes ago. He literally sat there and just watched me flop sweat. That's like awesome. Oh, it was terrible. Terrible. Somebody should have. I feel like that was Giuliani today.
Yeah, that was Giuliani for 45 minutes. So anyway, we've got Pennsylvania looking very much like that lawsuit will be thrown out. You know, Michigan, that lawsuit they pulled because they weren't really getting any traction there. There was, you know, a bit of a argument in Wayne County, Michigan, the other night.
Can you explain to me what's going on in Michigan? Because there's a story going on, and I'm somewhat confused.
Okay.
Well, there were two commissioners who refused to validate the votes in an area of the state or a county. Then they switched their minds and said they were going to, and then came back and said they were not going to.
Well, so basically,
I'm utterly confused about it.
You are referring to the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, who has to certify the vote, primarily from Detroit. The board has two Democrats, two Republicans on it. Two Republicans, Monica Palmer and William Hartman, voted against certifying it. So they were deadlocked at 2-2. There was, I'm going to say, a good couple hours of public comments after that, all criticizing Palmer and Hartman, saying that they were trying to disenfranchise African-American voters. You know, their argument was that there were, you know, voting irregularities. There were, you know, there were tabulation issues, which apparently is an ongoing thing in a lot of areas of Michigan. And as I come to find out that it was actually more effective in the general election than it had been in the primaries. And so after a couple of hours, they then changed their vote. So it was 4-0 to confirm and validate the election. They then came out afterwards and signed affidavits that they had changed their minds, which may, you know, be used in a future Trump lawsuit, but does not change the fact that those votes have now been certified and Michigan is pretty much set. I do want to pull up a video here. This is from Ned Stabler, who is also part of that Wayne County Board of Canvassers. He had some comments during a Zoom meeting the other night about the two Republicans that voted against it.
We also know that the Secretary of State and the Attorney General have already tweeted out that your legal arguments are rubbish and you're going to lose. when it comes to court. So we're not worried about that at all. I'm also not worried about any of your, things are bad so we can't certify arguments, because that's just ridiculous. You certified in August when they were worse. Less than 50% of the ballots were recountable. Now over 72% are. 58% of them are even balanced, when it was less than 30% last time. So it's doubled. It's gotten way better because the Secretary of State actually jumped in and did her job, unlike you. But I know it's not going to change your opinion. You talked about not certifying Detroit, even though you acknowledged that Livonia, a city, by the way, I know you know is 95% white, had bigger variances than Detroit, which is 80% black. We understand, and you've now added your name. So I'm not going to try to change your mind. I just want to let you know that the Trump stink, the stain of racism that you, William Hartman, and Monica Palmer have just covered yourself in, is going to follow you throughout history. Your grandchildren are going to think of you like Bull Connor or George Wallace. Monica Palmer and William Hartman will forever be known in southeastern Michigan as two racists who did something so unprecedented that they disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of black voters in the city of Detroit because they were ordered to. Probably, I know, Monica, you think Q told you to do it or some other crazy stuff like that. But just know, when you try to sleep tonight, that millions of people around the world now on Twitter know the name Monica Palmer and William Hartman as two people completely racist and without an understanding of what integrity means or a shred of human decency. The law isn't on your side. History won't be on your side. Your conscience will not be on your side. And Lord knows, when you go to meet your maker, your soul is going to be very, very warm.
Wow.
I mean, just crushed him. It was pretty awesome.
That shit is harsh.
So Michigan, again, nothing's going to change there. And Georgia, it was announced just a little bit earlier before we came on here that they had completed a hand audit of the count in Georgia, and nothing has changed. Joe Biden, president-elect, has still won Georgia with an excess of 14,000 votes. So all of these machinations, all of these lawsuits, you know, again, not surprising, not changing anything other than just really continuing to attempt to delegitimize democracy, delegitimize America, delegitimize the presidency, and also holding up the transition. We've got this woman in the GSA office, Emily Murphy, who is supposed to sign off on providing funds to the Biden transition team, and she has held off in doing so, which a number of people are saying will have a negative impact on coronavirus response, have a negative impact on national security. I mean, here we have, you know, President-elect and Joe Biden that's still not being included in national security briefings because this woman in the GSA is continuing to hold things up.
I think you are looking at the wrong problem right now.
No, what's the right problem?
The problem is that you have Donald Trump, who understands he is not going to be president after January 20th, 2021. He is looking at a calendar, understands that he has about 60 days as president, 60 days of seemingly total authority over the executive branch of the government. And I believe that he is going to be taking incredible advantage of that in ways that will damage this country worse than Joe Biden not being read into intelligence briefings. I think you've got a president who was reported last week as having asked advisors for options for a military strike against Iran, because apparently the Saudis and Israelis are very nervous that a Biden administration is not going to be as hungry for a war with Iran, is not going to be as open-minded to a military strike against Iran. So the idea is to push Trump towards engaging with Iran so that when Biden comes in, he will be stuck in an already established fight with Iran that he cannot extract this country out of. That, to me, is way more of a scary reality than Biden not understanding what the coronavirus approach is. We know what the coronavirus approach is right now by the federal government. There is not one. Right. There is no concerted effort. Trump has not met with his coronavirus team for months. They are absolutely not empowered to make any decisions or to do anything. That's not my worry. My worry is that he is he's going to be pardoning criminals. He's going to be he's going to be nominating judges. That
already today they confirmed a new judge, a woman, 33 years old. I forget her name, but the American Bar Association ranked her as not qualified. Like, not even, you know, other people they've been concerned with, they ranked her completely as not qualified, and she was appointed to a federal judgeship.
This is what worries me the most. This is what worries me way more, is that this man who has seemingly no respect for, has seemingly no respect for the institution of the presidency beyond his ability to benefit from it, either financially or as a reputation or seemingly a belief of power, that this man is going to fuck things up in the next 2 months more than he has right now.
One last election story that I got a kick out of this week. The Republican Secretary of State in Georgia mentioned that Trump could have potentially won the state by 10,000 votes if he hadn't suppressed his own base by talking down voting by mail. Apparently, there were around 24,000 Republicans who had voted by mail in the state's June 9th primary elections, who ended up not voting at all in the general election, and very possibly the Trump rhetoric could have been why. I mean, again, he only lost Georgia by 14,000 votes. And then if you carry that further, you look at the Senate race between John Ossoff and David Perdue, which went to is going to a runoff because it fell below the 50% margin. You know, if you throw 20 or 24,000 Republican votes Perdue's way, he wins that election with 50% or 50.1% of the vote.
Right.
So not only does Trump's rhetoric cost him the state, it may also cost the Republicans a Senate seat. We will find out more about that come January. Hey-o, fingers crossed.
Hey-o!
But yes, coronavirus, Brian, we had kind of gotten away from talking about coronavirus for a number of episodes, but it is back. It is back with a vengeance. They are.
When you say it's back, it never went away.
Well, I will say it went away in some states. As it flourished in the southern states, we got a little bit of a reprieve in you know, Pennsylvania and New York. But we are seeing it come back. I know Philadelphia has implemented restrictions again. No more indoor dining. Gathering counts are restricted. Did they close schools there in New York?
New York City shut down schools effective today. Yesterday was the announcement. Today, all New York City Department of Education institutions, which is the largest school system in the entire country, going all to remote. The great Governor Andrew Cuomo, the great Mayor Bill de Blasio, has already announced that at the rate we are testing positive in the direction that we are headed, sometime next week, likely, New York City will go from a yellow to an orange zone, which means that we will be eliminating indoor dining. We'll be eliminating hair salons. We'll be eliminating fitness centers and offices. Outdoor dining, not far behind.
All right. This was an interesting story, and I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it. And I think it's something that won't, you know, if they do stop indoor dining, it won't matter. But the city winery there in the meatpacking district in New York City was going to be trying out a test program on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, where they were going to require patrons to take a rapid coronavirus test at the door.
Great idea. It's a great idea.
And you'd have to pay for it. You would have to prepay $50 per person for the test. You would go to City Winery. They would give you the test, and you would wait you know, 10 to 15 minutes for the result, they'd give you a glass of wine or champagne to drink while you wait. And if you are negative, you could then go into the restaurant while still following the standard regulations such as masks and social distancing.
What was the benefit of it? Is that they can have more people indoors? It's just peace of mind.
I think it's a peace of mind thing. I think, you know, maybe it's something where, you know, they may have been doing indoor dining, but still not getting the numbers of people that they were hoping. So maybe the thought was, you know, if we provide this, because you figure Tuesday, Wednesdays aren't huge dining nights. If they provide this as
speak for yourself, buddy. Tuesday night is every week is I go out to a different place.
All right.
Michelin rated restaurants purely.
But anyway, would you pay? So let me ask you this. And again, it's a little different for you because you are someone with the antibodies. But what I want you to do is I want you to put yourself in the mindset of someone. Think back to when you didn't have the antibodies long ago. The old Brian, the non-plasma donating Brian, the man who did not have the antibodies.
I was sick. Yeah. I literally was sick.
Would it have been worth $50 to you to know that you were dining in a restaurant filled with potentially COVID negative people?
No.
Okay.
I don't believe that the rapid tests have the accuracy that I would need to feel absolutely comfortable. I think it's a well-established fact that the accuracy of those rapid tests is not as high as the regular tests that go on. No. Also, and I'd be remiss if I did not point out that I think $50 just to be able to sit down at a table to eat dinner is an outrageous barrier to entry, and I would rather spend that money elsewhere.
Well, especially at City Winery because they're overpriced to begin with.
Have you ever been to a City Winery?
We have a City Winery here in Philadelphia, and I did go there to see when the Bernie versus Trump comedy show was there with Zadomian and Tony Atamanek. That was worth it. It was a fun show.
Would you have paid $50 to gain access to it?
On top of the ticket price?
Yes.
I don't believe I would have now.
Okay. So that you're cheap is what you're saying.
This should not be news to you or anybody.
I'm frugal. I think you're the opposite of cheap.
See, I take care of you. I'm your sugar daddy. I get that.
No, that's not true. You support causes across the board. It is very common for you to buy a t-shirt or merchandise from a cause that you publicize. You are frequently eating out. You have 9 different types of oils in your kitchen. That does not
include... I think there are things that are worth spending money on. Like if you're going to support a small business or a good cause, I think, you know, good food, good prepared food with a proper oil is fine. I mean, I hear that there are people out there that will go to like a strip club and throw away like $900. That to me just seems foolish. You know, I think you could do so much more with that kind of money.
Can I tell you something? I am meeting the gentleman that I went to the strip club with that night. I'm meeting him for dinner tomorrow with his new lady friend.
Oh, is he picking up the tab, I hope?
He will probably make me because I owe him a lot of money on gambling losses.
Oh,
It's 4 figures. It's not good.
Really?
Yeah.
So you haven't been betting in the NFL with him. You've been betting other sports.
No, I had a absolutely terrible baseball playoffs, and I had a very poor NBA playoffs.
Fair enough.
To put it lightly, I could absolutely see him over the course of dinner to sit there and say, by the way, you're paying for dinner, and just take
and
it off my
right.
tab.
Right.
And he absolutely has a right to do that. Maybe during After Dark next week, during the pajama party, I will have a news story of going to strip clubs and becoming much poorer.
I would like that. All right.
I would hope that's not the case. I hope that I just go for dinner and have a good time.
There you go. Let's talk about Tyson Foods, Brian. While we're talking coronavirus, a wrongful death lawsuit tied to COVID-19 infections at Tyson Foods' largest pork processing plant accuses the meatpacking giant of ordering employees to come to work while supervisors privately bet money on how many would get infected with the deadly coronavirus. There's been a lot of conversation about how there has been no stimulus package provided since the initial one. And one of the hangups has always been Mitch McConnell and the Republican wanting to put in there that people cannot sue companies over COVID infections. And this is the perfect reason why the Democrats have held firm. You literally have a company that seemingly was betting money. It accuses plant managers Tom Hart of organizing a cash buy-in, winner-takes-all betting pool for supervisors and managers to guess how many plant employees would test positive after being forced to report for work.
First off, that's just absolutely terrible. It's awful, gross human beings. I would never do that. Maybe. What I don't understand, and maybe you can answer this, is why have the meatpacking industry been COVID hotspots? Why is it the act of butchering animals has led to, I don't want to say an astronomical, but it's absolutely been an industry of employment where a very high rate of COVID infected workers have been found.
Well, I think you've got a few reasons there. I mean, you have, while there is obviously a level of, you know, cleanliness that goes into food processing, you know, you also have, you know, buildings that are closed in, not well ventilated, not great air processing. You've got people working right alongside each other, you know, not being able to social distance. You've got, you know, a number of these employees are, you know, members of, you know, of races that are getting hit hard in their own communities with COVID and then bringing it into work. So I think you've got a number of factors there. You've got companies that, you know, not providing proper PPE and protection for their employees. Because remember, Trump required all of the meat packing plants to remain open
right
back in April.
We absolutely had to maintain the food chain, the food supply. There were households in Philadelphia suburbs where meat needed to be sous vide without any disruption. It had to continue.
So
avocado oil needed to be utilized because it has a higher smoking point than canola oil, so that steaks would be able to be...
to be fair, I use the avocado oil on my potatoes mostly.
Can I know this is a little sliver into my brain, but it bothers me that there's this like layer of knowledge that you have that I don't, and I cover it up by blasting you for it and mocking you for it. But deep down inside, it bothers me that you actually know that if I'm going to be cooking this, that's the right type of oil to use. But if I'm going to make that, then this is the right oil. Bothers me. I'm a little jealous.
I mean, in the age of the internet, Brian, there is no reason not to have this knowledge available to you. But more importantly than what you're cooking with, what are you watching?
In a world where Brian has no concept of oil other than canola from Missoula. Coming at ya.
What am I watching? Okay, I have I watched the first three episodes of season two of The Mandalorian. For those eagle-eyed listeners of the podcast, last week my beef of the week was friends who abuse me in hopes of gaining the benefit of using my login for the.
That was people booing me for using your login.
I never said it was you. I don't know what you're talking about. I never pointed fingers. But this week I knocked out the first three episodes of season two of The Mandalorian, and could I not be more disappointed? Season one establishes the character of the Mandalorian, establishes the character arc, the call to action, the hero's journey, for those of us who have written screenplays and understand how to write a story.
Right, right.
Season two feels like it's going to be just random interactions that the Mandalorian comes into, is confronted with as he is somehow trying to do something with the baby Yoda.
Yes.
It feels like they've given up any attempt to move a story forward. And this is now just like, well, what we're going to do is we've already established the character and what his goal is and why he's doing this. So now what we're going to do is just bring him from one planet to another to get involved in whatever issue that planet, that group of people are dealing with, where he is somehow going to save the day, and then he's going to leave and he's going to go to a different planet for more adventures.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I like the first season, but it definitely seems that, you know, the first few episodes of season two have fallen into that pattern of, yes, here's your main objective, but
we're going to distract you.
To get another step down the road of this main objective, you have to go on this. It's like a video game. We have to go on this mission before you can get to the next screen.
Yes.
You have to go on this mission. Comment from Billy. Apparently, season two is setting up a lot for future episodes and potential spinoffs. We shall see. I think everyone pretty much agreed that Baby Yoda jumped the shark with the frog woman in episode two. Which, if you
when he was eating the eggs?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert!
I mean, again, I think it's still a decent show, but I am concerned that it is falling into this very predictable pattern in the second season.
Yeah. Yeah, the first episode, I was like, wait a second. And then I saw it happen again in the second and again in the third, and I said, oh, wait a second. I'm not signing up for this ride. What are you watching?
So I am watching on HBO The Undoing with Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman. It is a tale of two plastic surgeons. Nicole Kidman's surgeon did a great job. Hugh Grant's plastic surgeon, not as well. But it is also a murder story. You know, it's good. It's watchable. I would say check it out. I think it's only six episodes. I think I'm done down to the last two episodes.
Would you be able to share with me, you know, off show? Would you be able to give me your HBO Max Plus password so I can log in?
Actually, I'm doing that through my Amazon Prime, so I don't actually have a specific HBO password.
You son of a bitch. I have HBO and I have my own account and I pay for it every month.
I pay for it. I just added it on as a channel to my Amazon Prime.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah, you can do it that way.
I'm fucking paying through Spectrum. And I literally could not tell you the last time I put on an HBO movie on my TV. I literally cannot.
Well, Undoing is on HBO. I would say check that out. Okay. Also, a new docuseries on HBO called Murder on Middle Street. It's about a woman who was basically murdered at her home in Connecticut, I want to say about 10 years ago. And kind of the twist is that her son is the one that is doing this documentary. He initially started it in 2013 as a project in college. In the first episode, it then jumps to 2016. So it's, I believe, four episodes altogether. So it's interesting. I mean, the father who was divorcing the woman, you know, seems shady as fuck. So it goes that direction. But then again,
so he's writing this as in like he thinks his dad did it.
It's the first episode I think was well done. Like he clearly has questions about whether his father was involved or not. And his father does not help the situation because whenever he talks to his father about it, his father will not talk about the case at all because his dad lawyered up years ago, literally will not. Like he even said, like, dad, were you involved in his? He's like, all I can tell you is I didn't kill her. But he won't say no to the question, you know, were you involved in any way? Like he just wants to say a defense.
Yeah.
But then they give you like a little twist at the end of the first episode to be like, oh, here's like she had these secrets and here's something else that she was involved in. And maybe this is, you know. So I think it's gonna be one of those things where, you know, you're led in one direction and then they kind of lead you in another direction. I don't know if we get any resolution at the end of it or not.
Which episode is the one where they detail how they were branding women's upper thighs to show that they were part of the inner circle?
That's a different docuseries, which I think you stopped watching. That was The Vow, also on HBO.
I watched one episode and lost interest.
I will say this. My wife has, for some reason, started to watch Dawson's Creek again on Netflix. This is where we're at in the pandemic. I think she's
watching Dawson's Creek. That's a fucking high school show.
And as bad as I thought that show was when I watched it once, like back in, what was it? Was it 90s or early 2000s?
I think it was 2000s.
Horrible back then. Even more horrible today. Like even like just did not age well whatsoever.
I can't imagine that it did.
Yeah, just got awful. But that's where we're at. You know, there's not a lot of stuff to watch. Cobra Kai doesn't come out till next year. I think Servant on Apple TV, that was another series we watched. That doesn't come back till January 15th. So there's a definite gap of crap to watch right now.
That there is. We're all trying to survive this pandemic. Some people are in the hospital suffering from the disease. Your wife is sitting there just, you know, losing interest in new entertainment. Maybe, you know what I think we should do in all honesty? I think we all should rewatch Tiger King.
and people are hopeful that Joe Exotic will get pardoned by Donald Trump as one of his outgoing acts.
No, he's not.
I know. He probably won't happen. No.
That bitch, Carol Baskin. Also, in a world.
Wonder Woman 1984 comes out as well.
Is that my girl?
Gail Godot. She's a hot little number. I'll give you that much.
I would say that if you were going to cheat on your wife, it would be with Gal Gadot.
Potentially. I mean, she's definitely in the argument.
Do you believe you could get a hall pass?
Probably not.
No, I don't think your wife does not come across as the type of person that would sit there and be like, I'm okay with that.
Although I already know who her hall pass would be, so I guess maybe I get a hall pass as well.
Is it me?
It is not you. You don't remember from the Newlywed Game? It was Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. All right, Eagles fan, Philly, I get it. All right, whatever. But yeah, we're going to be watching Wonder Woman when it comes out on HBO Max because, Ron, you're stealing it. I'm paying for it.
Well, I don't Billy's have HBO Max. I just have HBO.
HBO Max is what? Is that the online?
Apparently, Max is a different subscription than just having the HBO channel. I have the HBO channel, but I do not have access to HBO Max through my.
I've got HBO Max. Son of a bitch! You're gonna ask for my login on that, aren't you?
I'll need that login. It's all right.
I feel used. Anything else?
I don't think so. I think we've had a good conversation here. I think we've covered a lot of topics. I think we've educated. I think we've entertained. And I think we've all gotten a little bit closer.
In this absolutely. I feel good. I feel good.
We will get even more close in After Dark.
For those people who are not patrons watching right now live, you've got about 16 minutes to go to patreon.com. Ron, can you put up the banner below? You've got 16 minutes. Jump on, go to our website, Ron and Brian Podcast. Click on the Patreon banner on the right hand side of the website. Sign up for as little as $5 a month. Support the show, the money that you are spending. It is not paying for Ron's mortgage, it is not paying my rent. We are putting it back into the show so that we can get better guests, we can get more guests, we can drink better beer, we can drink more beer, better graphics.
Better graphics, better focus. And real quick, can we watch the drop tart video? Because I just love that one. That's my new favorite video from last week.
Going here, man, suddenly hits his piece of metal on the ground and drops the heart.
Down goes the heart. Down goes the heart. All right.
You ready
to get out here and get ready for After Dark, my friend?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for joining us. We will catch you all next week.